listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Good Sunday morning to you. We are 200 days away until the kickoff of the 2023 NFL season. I cannot wait. But of course, Brian Hanley, this will be the first Sunday without a football game in a long, long time. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley. We're hanging out with you until 11 o'clock today. And I figured that would be a great place to start because even though we know that the conclusion of the Super Bowl occurred last Sunday night, people now this weekend finally have to come to terms with the reality that they need to find something else to do with their Sundays. And for the vast majority, I don't believe the XFL is it.
No. He hate me? Is he still in that league?
I don't believe Rod Smart is.
I was out to dinner with some people last night, and the older crowd, mm-hmm. and they were still, hey, what was with that halftime show? Hey, was that really a hold? I mean, even though it's almost a week removed, they're like, what'd you think of the game? I said, I thought it was a terrific game. And they started chapter and verse about what was wrong with the entire thing. I'm like, okay, James Bradbury said he helped the guy. And then like a day or so later, there's a camera angle that we didn't really see during the broadcast where he clearly has a fistful of jersey. Feel free earlier in the second half to do something about KC marching up and down the field when Patrick Mahomes is turning into Superman again. I mean, you had that game in your back pocket at halftime.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, I think the problem is that it is unsatisfactory as a sports observer to watch a game, and I don't even want to say decided by, because that like insinuates in some way that the refs took command of the game and decided they wanted it to go their way. To your point, which you just said, James Bradbury freely admitted he held. We've all seen the camera views. It's unsatisfying for it to end that way, but that's what we sign up for. That's the game that we watch week in and week out. It is filled with penalties oftentimes. And so, for it to end on a couple of, Patrick Mahomes kneel downs until Harrison Butker kicks it through the uprights.
And they slide down at the one.
Jerick McKinnon, absolutely. Yeah. You know what? Underrecognized, just while you brought it up, that's great coaching. Recognizing that, hey, you know what? We're in this moment. The only way the Eagles can really probably get back into this one and have a realistic shot of winning it is if we go ahead and score that touchdown. So, no, in the huddle, let's let our guys know that don't go into the end zone.
And it's unsatisfying as a fan because it's counter to everything you do, the emotion of sports in the moment. He should be in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And it's great strategy and it's the right thing to do, but and we're still debating what's a catch in the NFL. And, the couple of those passes on the sideline, did he control it all the way to the ground? You got to do something about that. I mean, if 98% of the fans believe it's a catch and here comes the review and they're explaining it's not a catch, that's a problem for the league. And it's a problem for your brand. But as games go, the people at dinner last night, I liked the first half. It was up and down. Great. Teams were just going up and down the field at will. Again, the Eagles have no one to blame but themselves and Patrick Mahomes for what happened in that second half. You can't just fold like that. You can't let him take over a game when he's re-aggravated the ankle on top of it and he's running for 26 yards in a key play.
Yeah, if at this point anybody had any doubts about just how good of a generational talent Patrick Mahomes is, you saw, I think he finally made he probably converted everybody at that point, because when you're dealing with playing at less than 100% and you're still clearly one of the best players on the field, the defense can't do much to stop you. There's no more that needs to be said. He is going to be tremendously fun to watch for the next decade.
This is how great he is beyond the MVP awards, and he's a Hall of Famer, no doubt. Matt Nagy can't even screw him up.
So that's a good point.
With Eric Bieniemy going to the Commanders And everyone says it's, you know, all signs point to Matt Nagy getting the big Denny's menu again and being the offensive coordinator. It, look, Andy Reid's going to run that offense.
Yes.
So, you know, Matt, God bless him. And I know Patrick Finley, my buddy at the Sun-Times, had some great features on Matt, on Matt leading up to the game. He's a great guy. I've said forever, the last 3 years, you'd love to have him as your next-door neighbor. He's not a bad guy. You did not root against him. He was not a good head coach. He will not be a head coach in this league again unless Kansas City hands him the reins. And he's not Andy Reid, and I don't think he deserves another shot. And Nagy told Patrick Finley, no one can take away the coach of the year season and executive of the year. That was Vic Fangio's defense and their 38 takeaways or whatever. I mean, that wasn't the offense when those awards are getting to the playoffs. So God bless him, you know, with his one season that, you know, looked good here and then the 6-5 and 6 game losing streaks that went on after the fact. And he had to fire himself from play calling not once, but a couple times.
It's interesting because I've argued now with Waddle intensely this week, but also over the last few weeks about how I do believe that Matt Nagy will get a head coaching gig within the next decade. I do, and you know, I can't give you the exact timeline, but I think, and I'm not saying that he'll necessarily deserve it, but I just think after having watched this league for as long as I have, he is, and you're right, he is a nice guy, and that's going to play into it. He's very likable. I think back before everybody had made up their mind that Matt Nagy was a complete boob, the introductory press conference had everybody oohing and aahing and raving about the possibilities when Matt Nagy was introduced as the Bears head coach. People couldn't believe, oh, you finally got a fresh, young offensive mind who explains things in detail. And it just goes to show it's always going to be a results-oriented business for the most part. And I think, to your point about hitching, you know, even Matt Nagy can't screw up a Patrick Mahomes offense, I think a couple years removed now with Matt Nagy running the Kansas City Chiefs offense, maybe another Super Bowl or two along the way, and what he brought up, that coach of the year in 2018 to point to, is going to be a way for him to spin it forward. And I think when teams get hip to a couple years removed, he can spin it one way. I'm sure he'll push some of the blame onto Ryan Pace in that interview process. And I do believe that Matt Nagy will be a head coach, if not in Kansas City as the successor to Andy Reid. I think a few years removed with Patrick Mahomes rehabilitating him, I think he will get another crack at it. But that is something we'll have to wait and see it play out.
I just think if it's not Kansas City, it's not going to happen. And I still, you know, Ryan Pace is not going to be a GM anytime in league anytime at all.
That's fair. I agree with that. And generally GMs don't get a second crack at it. That's much more hard to do. One thing I do want to say, too, about the Bradberry hold before we move on, I would much rather the officials call, again, unsatisfactory, call the play, as opposed to, and I always think back to the Saints-Rams NFC Championship game where Mikal Robbie Coleman absolutely obliterated a Saints wide receiver who was wide open for a walk-in touchdown. Drew Brees lays it out, and there's no call. The refs kept it in their pocket because they, quote, let them play in the final moments in what was clearly, obviously, a ridiculous pass interference. The worst I can ever remember seeing not called. And in that instance, that actually robbed the Saints of a Super Bowl appearance. And Sean Payton has commented about how there's not a day that goes by that he doesn't, that play doesn't creep into his mind, at least at some point. And it's
Screaming like everyone else. You're screaming at the TV. I mean, like, what do you know, there's letting them play and there's that.
You can't,
on the biggest stage, the biggest game. It's too bad. We were talking about it last week before the game that hopefully the officiating wasn't going to come into play. Well, inevitably it does. But again, it wasn't that one play is a talking point. It's written about, it's headlines. But the fact of the matter is the Eagles could have won that game, should have won that game, and found a way to lose that game.
Let's try Jim, who's in Crystal Lake. Jimmy, you're on with Miller and Hanley on ESPN 1000. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Happy early Sunday morning. I was just wondering, I heard Mel Kiper discuss a couple times about how awful the field was and how Philadelphia didn't have any sacks, and that was a main reason why. And the more I hear about it, I'm kind of ticked about it because I had money on Philadelphia.
Sure.
You know, so, I mean, I'm just wondering, is there going to be complaints across the NFL for this? I mean, did Vegas have something to do with the field? Because, I mean, it's just, that's terrible. That is awful for the Eagles to be taken away with their, you know, record-setting year for sacks, and they can't even record one in the Super Bowl. That's just awful to me.
It made Soldier Field sod look pretty good. That's how bad it was. I mean, then you read that it was special grass that they actually cultivated for the game and worked on it for months. And you know that stadium, Jeff, where they can slide the entire field outside and get sun and water it and slide it back in on the track. And I mean, and then you guys can't even get their footing. And, you know, the first couple of times, like, well, that's pretty odd. And then it's like every other snap. That the NFL, you actually went out and had experts put together this new turf, and that's what you got. I mean, good Lord, that was awful. And your guys are changing cleats and still not, you know, then really putting the effort to get a foot down to be able to make a cut. It was awful.
Not that anybody ever debated that football is not a television sport, but that is evidence all you need in their marquee signature event, the Super Bowl, where we know every single year it's going to be the most viewed thing on television in the world. We know that, right? And so this occurs, and they would rather be obsessed with the field of play being spray painted with whatever they use to make sure that it shines and glistens for television, as opposed to the product on the field being the best it possibly could. Because I don't know if it was, like you said, the new turf that they, you know, designed specifically for the Super Bowl in hopes that it would be the best, or the combination of that turf being painted, you know, the week before in hopes of making it sparkle for all of our eyes on television. But the reality is, yes, the edge rushers who rely a great deal on their footing and who have to spin or try and bend around a tackle, they're the ones who are most susceptible when they're, you know, bigger guys trying to accelerate and then move quickly. They're the ones who did take the brunt of it. And I think, to Jim's point, the Eagles probably took out one of their biggest strengths, their pass rushing ability, which was in reality the only way they were really going to be able to stop Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, is if they could get a decent pass rush. So I think you could point directly to the field of play and say, yeah, that probably contributed greatly to the Chiefs' victory in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's not a good look. I mean, it's when you're a multi-billion dollar industry and the premier sports league in the world, and even your worst teams in the league could be playing and it'll draw a pretty good TV rating because it's the NFL. I mean, you got to be better than that. You've got to make sure everything is taken care of and everything is checked out before you actually flip that coin to start the Super Bowl.
We're one step closer, and at this point, I feel like there's no going back to the Bears playing in Arlington Heights. We'll talk about it next.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Up with you here on this Sunday morning inside the Old National Bank studio. So earlier this week on Wednesday, Brian, the Chicago Bears tweeted out an open letter regarding the closing on the Arlington Park property. And it began, quote, "Last fall, we released an open letter confirming the team had reached an agreement for the purpose of acquiring 326 acres of property in Arlington Heights to secure the potential of beginning a new and exciting chapter for the Bears, our fans, the Chicagoland community, and the state of Illinois. This week, we took another step toward realizing that vision by closing on the Arlington Park property. Finalizing the purchase does not guarantee the land will be developed, but It is an important next step in our ongoing evaluation of the opportunity. There is still a tremendous amount of due diligence work to be done to determine if constructing an enclosed state-of-the-art stadium and multi-purpose entertainment district is feasible. And it goes on quite a bit after that, but that is the gist of it. The Bears officially have become that much closer to becoming the Arlington Heights Bears. Of course, they'll always be named the Chicago Bears, but it looks like we are that much closer, and I can't imagine you would go ahead and, you know, just drop close to $200 million without a full go intention of eventually opening that domed stadium out there.
You know, when you hear Lori Lightfoot, who's obviously, you know, trying to be reelected, talk about this week, well, now that the deal's done, we can go back and have conversations because they, you know, legally they were not allowed to continue talking to the city of Chicago until they closed on the deal. I mean, talk about political spin. Mm. They're not coming back, Madam Mayor. And the guy who wants to develop the high-rises and the transportation hub and all the entertainment district adjacent to Soldier Field, or renovated Soldier Field, he's desperate to keep them there. But you just said it. They didn't spend $197 million to close on a 326-acre property in Arlington Heights to be a landlord for, you know, townhouses out there. And the mayor said, well, we can redo naming rights and keep Soldier Field in the official name of the, and, you know, they can make money that way. Even if you did the math with like SoFi Stadium, and they're rumored to get 20 to 30 million per year on a 20-year lease, it's 600 million, which seems like serious money. But they own everything in that stadium, the two teams, Chargers and Rams, right? So parking, concessions, all the private clubs, all the personal seat licenses. There's no way that a Park District-owned Soldier Field, new naming rights or not, can compete with what money can be made when you own everything in around a 326-acre development.
Exactly. It's just, and I don't want to, you know, I know that, you know, she's positioning herself, Lori Lightfoot, to try and make it like it is a realistic possibility, especially, you know, in an attempt to gain reelection, but positioning it so that there's still some type of belief that the Chicago Bears will stay at Soldier Field. And while they'll still be there, I believe, for another 5 or 6 years, because it's not like you're going to be, you know, just snapping your fingers and then all of a sudden have a domed stadium up at Arlington Heights. There still will be plenty of years before this is a finalized project. But she was dealing with a situation where a lot of all the stuff you laid out, it was an unwinnable fight when the land became available in Arlington Heights for the Bears. Like, when you look at it, they're landlocked up at Soldier Field.
Yep.
We've talked about this. The reason there is no parking is because they're landlocked, and there's only so much you can do on the museum campus. The reality is all of the opportunities for a, you know, long ago, owning a sports organization turned into a very profitable endeavor, and it was no longer about winning championships. And granted, it's great if you have an owner who also wants to try and do both, you know, make a lot of money and try and win titles, maybe at the expense of some profit along the way. But the vast majority of owners who own sports franchises are looking for the next revenue stream. And if you look up at Arlington Heights, all the possibilities that exist, what you can do with potential a gambling partner, if building some, you know, casino, some sports book up at Arlington Heights, just seems to be a natural progression down the road once they get the stadium built and some of the ancillary things. But that's something that the Bears, even if they did own the property on Soldier Field, which they never will, because obviously the city has no real intention of selling them that land, that it's just, it's a not a fair fight. So while Lori Lightfoot and even other opponents of hers have tried to talk about the idea of the Bears staying, you're not having the same conversation.
And look, you know, there's already talk and debate in Springfield about property tax certainty, which is basically we don't want our property taxes going up every single year, like everyone who owns property in the state and Cook County and Chicago in particular. Mm-hmm. It's guaranteed it's going up. I mean, that they voted that into law. It's based on the cost of living, right? They don't want to have to take that vote every year. So they said, unfortunately, inflation goes up 8%. Supposedly, your property tax is going to go up the same amount. And Lori Lightfoot had a cap at 5% because of the outcry. But the days of the God bless Jerry Reinsdorf. You know, Sox fans don't think much of him as an owner right now because 2005 is a long time ago. But as a businessman, he got the best lease agreement in the history of the state and maybe the country with, you know, the sell, the rate now. The state pays, guarantees, ticket sales, everything. Mm-hmm. Those days are over. I mean, the state's bankrupt. They can't afford that. When the United Center was built, Bill Wirtz and Jerry Reinsdorf did it privately, but they did get all the infrastructure, like all the utilities and roads around that. That was given to them by the state. That was, a contribution by the state, a break, if you will, financially. But Tom Ricketts tried to get something similar at Wrigley Field, and obviously there were politics in play with Rahm Emanuel, but he didn't get any help rehabbing Wrigleyville and basically did it on his own. So that fight will go on, and they'll extract something. They'll probably get utilities and piping and water hookups and everything else. I don't know about the property tax stuff. But people don't want to see billionaires be subsidized by taxpayers anymore. And I think the on Soldier Field, there's still more than $600 million owed on the bonds that did the rehab, paid for the rehab at Soldier Field. And they'll say, well, that came from the hotel tax. So it's not really people in Chicago paying, it's visitors. Well, OK, but that money could go to other things that the city and the state could use if it didn't go to the Bears. Right. So
sure.
It sounds nice that the people coming to visit Chicago or the conventioners are paying a high tax rate on their hotel room. So that's, but that money, that $1 billion or a couple billion could go somewhere else. And with 5 or 6 years left on the lease or 8 years, whatever, we still own $600 million on it. So the math just doesn't work. But all that said, the Bears are going to build in Arlington Heights, and that's just the way it is. I mean, there's no going, they're not going back to Soldier Field.
Yeah. I'm flummoxed to come up with what red tape would prevent them from actually eventually building in Arlington Heights. To your point earlier, they didn't just buy 326 acres to be a landlord. This is not a property flip stadium edition here where they're looking to flip this property down the road here as a profit, right? So
yeah.
They will
love it or list it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. At some point, there will be a stadium out in Arlington Heights. You can feel very confident about that. And another marker for the Bears when they brought in Kevin Warren to be their team president. That should have told you all you needed if you were doubting it at any point. The reason, of course, he was a coup for them to land the Big Ten commissioner. But of course, his history in building U.S. Bank Stadium was no doubt critical, not only to the Bears for hiring him, but also probably why, I think he stated it, as to why he was so interested. Part of the reasons that he was so interested in becoming the Bears team president. I thought it would be good to remind folks in case they had forgotten, because it was before the closing of the Arlington Park property. Kevin Warren met the media at his introductory press conference back on January 17th. This is what he had to say about what he's learned in building a stadium back when he helped the Minnesota Vikings open U.S. Bank Stadium.
A couple things I learned. I remember when we finished the stadium, I have all these boxes of binders, and many people said, you can get rid of those. You'll never use those again. I'm glad I saved them. But I think the biggest thing I learned was the fact that you need to plan before you start digging. And I think what made and makes U.S. Bank Stadium so special, we spent almost a year in planning. And planning is critical, and that's what I appreciate about the McCaskies is they support the planning process. And so I think that will be really critical from that standpoint. I know we're focused on Arlington Park and that stadium development project. I look forward to leaning in to the stadium development project. But I think the biggest thing we can do is to make sure that we're methodical, we're detailed, and we take the time to plan it properly.
Again, that was January 17th. Now, a little over a month removed from that, you just go ahead and, you know, play it out. You're looking at 2024, based on what he just said there, you know, at least a year of planning. Maybe they can expedite that just a little bit because he does still have the binders with him, Brian, and he didn't throw them away. So maybe you can expedite the process a little bit. But you heard him there, and everything Kevin Warren has said is, you know, part of the reason I have a great deal of confidence in Kevin Warren is because of the way he speaks. He tends to, at least from what I've garnered so far, tell it like it is. And he is very adamant that he wants to be meticulous in the planning process, which I think is great. You know, what's the old saying? You know, measure twice, cut once. That's the way I want to do it, especially if I'm building a mega project in the Midwest, as I believe they referred to it. I want to make sure I get it right if we're going to be doing things there for the next 30, maybe 40 years if we, you know, knock it out of the park.
Well, look at this. The last year, Forbes rated the Bears fifth overall in the NFL in terms of valuation for a franchise. And again, go back to the Super Bowl shuffle. It's been a long time since they actually won a Super Bowl. So 1985 notwithstanding, they don't own Soldier Field, and they don't have anything near what some of these other teams in the league have. And they were valued at $5.8 billion. Can you imagine? And the Cowboys are sitting up there at $8 billion. And they the Cowboys had more than $1 billion in revenue last season to the Bears, $520 million. I mean, imagine when they put that brand new stadium up and it looks anything like what Kevin did in Minneapolis. I mean, they're going to be a $10 billion franchise without winning anything. So the math is just too attractive out there. It just is what it is. And you said it, Soldier Field's footprint, you can't do much with it. You can put lipstick on it, but it's still going to be a pit.
The biggest issue for the Bears is probably securing the funding that you talked about earlier, because I'm sure, like you said, the state is going to do a lot in its power to make this a little bit more difficult. They're going to put the onus on the Bears and the NFL to try and find funding. And I'm sure that they will be able to. They'll find someone with deep pockets who wants to be in business, who will be taking a large cut of, you know, whatever future activities, entertainment things are hosted at the new stadium. But nevertheless, I think that's going to be the Bears' most difficult process, not necessarily the planning, but just finding who is going to do the vast majority of the funding, because that's the one part where I don't think they're going to want to have a partner for that when all is said and done.
Yeah, the NFL, they give teams the no interest loans that are paid back over time. So there's, you know, the money's going to be there. They didn't do this and put down $197 million on an income. They have it all figured out. They have their hat out, and they want the state to fill it up with as much money as they can. But, you know, again, the days of the state building and funding a stadium completely like we did with the White Sox, those days are well over. But they've hired lobbyists, and they're going to try to get what they can get. And they'll get something, but it's this stadium's going up no matter how much help they get or don't get from the government.
He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. What were you doing last night? It was Saturday night. Did you know a former Chicago Bulls player saved the slam dunk contest? We'll fill you in next.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Jeff Meller, Brian Hanley, back with you here on ESPN 1000. And generally, Brian, I have to say that I don't really get into All-Star Saturday nights, but last night I was definitely captivated by former member of the Chicago Bulls, Mac McClung, because he put on an absolute display. The G Leaguer for the Philadelphia 76ers, who was signed to a two-way contract just so he could compete in the slam dunk competition, put on quite the display last night, and it was fabulous. And if you listen to Reggie Miller, he gave us this as it was wrapping up.
Matt McClung has saved the dunk contest. Our G Leaguer has saved. He has saved the dunk contest.
Mac McClung saved the slam dunk competition. Your thoughts on the G Leaguer just capturing and captivating the crowd last night?
Well, at first I thought it was great that they let a 16-year-old into the contest. But, I mean, that kid hit every note perfectly during the contest, certainly, to the winning the press conference, the aw-shucks, and, you know, the honoring his high school, Gate City, with the jersey.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, being a G Leaguer, and he talked about how much time preparation he and his buddies and his high school best friend put into this, from researching and trying to do dunks that were never seen.
Yep.
Had eight, whittled it down to four, and hit everyone perfectly, to being from a small town of 1,600 people and the aw shucks. I mean, you couldn't have written a better script for that night. But if he's not in the G League, if he's a legit NBA Zach LaVine star, you don't have time to put that kind of time into the slam dunk contest, right? So I don't know that it happens again or it happens anytime soon. But for one night, it was great entertainment, and it was a great story, and it was a great feel good for the NBA.
He's 6'2", and you're right. He was note perfect in everything that unfolded last night. It was Friday. I was hosting with Waddle, and I was asking the question, is the NBA missing the mark by no longer having, or I guess, are they missing the mark by still having the slam dunk contest close the night out? Because clearly all of the superstars were competing in the three-point competition, and Dame Lillard won that last night against a couple of Indiana Pacers in the final, and Buddy Hield and Tyrese Halliburton. And before the event took place, I was making the argument that for the last 5 or 6 years, it really does seem like the three-point contest has taken over as to what people are most interested in, who wins, right? Because it did seem like we've been there, done that, seen everything we could possibly see with the slam dunk competition. But last night, to your point, Mac McClung and his high school friends being very proactive about figuring out, okay, how can we show fans something they've never seen before? It was awesome. He is 6'2", so let's be honest. It always helps, I think, if you're a dunk contest participant, it always helps you if you're a smaller guard who has mad hops. It just looks that much more aesthetically pleasing to watch a guy who can get up and throw it down. And to your point, too, about him looking like he's 16 years old, that certainly played and helped as well. And oh, by the way, do you remember the Mac McClung era for the Bulls?
No, I had to look it up. I didn't get to any Windy City Bulls games. I don't know actually if he was a big cog in that one season in the Bulls organization, or what what he left out there in where it's not Schaumburg. Where they're playing out at the old Sears Arena, wherever.
Yeah, McClung has played two games in his NBA career, one of which came for the Chicago Bulls when he played for 3 minutes. And he scored one bucket. It was not a dunk, by the way. It was a short little jumper. So, but it was awesome to watch him just put on a show. And I think what made it, if for anybody who watched it last night, there's been so many different iterations of the slam dunk competition that it has evolved into. I think they've finally kind of figured it out, where they give the participants 90 seconds to pull off the dunk. And what was so cool about watching McClung was that he had four dunks throughout the entirety of the competition, and every single one he nailed on his first attempt. And that just added to the legacy of Mac McClung, because it's great if you can awe me, but it loses a little something when I've seen you attempt the same dunk a couple of times prior and not pull it off. You know, there's something to being able to just step onto the courts and whatever, set up the ancillary objects you're using, whether it be, you know, the props being your couple of high school buddies jumping over them or whatever other props. There's something to be said for being able to just step onto the court. The crowd doesn't know what you're attempting to do. And then the first time to be able to pull it off and just show generate awe from everybody, there is something to that as well.
Well, how about the trust factor? Is, you know, as you mentioned, if you haven't seen it, you know, we can't really do it justice. You need to go see the video. But when he has two of his buddies, one's on top of the shoulders of the other, holding the ball with his back to Mac, and he's got to trust that Mac's going to clear him and not knock him into, you know, down onto the floor. And he grabs the ball and he finishes the dunk. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
To your point, he grabs the ball off of his two buddies. They're doing, you know, the one hops on the other buddy's shoulders.
Yeah.
And then he's holding the ball on his back, the guy who's on top. And then as McClung grabs that ball, he then touches the backboard, the bottom of the backboard, before slamming it down. Everything McClung did last night was showing an emphasis on his ability to have that, just that absurd hang time, right? Like, he did a couple, he did a hesitation dunk, which I know Kenny Smith saw initially. And it was one of those things too, where as great as it looked, and they all did look really good live the first time you watched them, when you slowed them down, they took on even more of a degree of difficulty, because it was sometimes it's hard to see exactly what a player is pulling off and how much they're putting into it. And so his dunks resonated that much more in slow motion as well.
Oh, and he talked in the press conference. I mean, it wasn't happenstance. He said, I was hoping in super slow mo, everyone would see that I did hit the backboard. It was choreographed to do exactly what he did. But he said in real time, he didn't think anyone was going to be able to see it. So, I mean, everything was the amount of time they put in, and effort and research. And he even gave a shout out to Zach LaVine, you know, who's had, you know, an interesting week on his own, about how much that made him want to someday be in the slam dunk competition because of what Zach used to do when he was winning that thing and awing people. It was terrific entertainment, no doubt about it.
And you said too, he was, you know, he was humble in all the press conferences he did immediately after winning the dunk contest. He was interviewed by Adam Lefko of TNT, and this is what you heard.
Kenny said, one, a star has been born, and two, you have saved the dunk contest. Can I get you to commit to doing the dunk contest again next year?
I got you. If you guys will have me, I'll be back.
We want Mac McClung back. Give it up. AT&T Slam Dunk Champ, Mac McClung.
Gotta love that, the humble nature. If you guys will have me, I'd love to be back. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I still think, you know, he still believes that he's going to play in the league someday. Time will tell, but 24 years old, I don't doubt anything he puts his mind to. If that's, you know, the kind of detail and attention he paid to this to make sure that his moment in the spotlight played out exactly as he'd hoped, God bless him.
Well, and you would have to think, too, you know, to have a former slam dunk contest winner on your roster, even if it's at the bottom of the roster, you know, there's something to be said for what happened last night, generating potentially a roster spot for him, if not with the Sixers, with some other team down the road here. Because, again, you know, I do think you can, there could be a little bit of marketing surrounding Mac McClung going forward here. So I think he may have, with what he was able to do last night, carve out a little bit of a niche, at least for a short period of time on NBA rosters. Obviously, his play will have to, you know, help keep him there. But I think somebody's going to be willing to take a shot on Mac McClung going forward.
Now, will he be in competition with Westbrook to run the offense for the Bulls? How will that work? Will they just be in the same backcourt? Will they share the ball? How's that going to play out for the Bulls?
This is an unanswerable question, Bri, that we'll have to wait and see. Let's try Joey G, who's in Melrose Park. Joey, you're on with Miller and Hanley.
Miller!
What's going on?
How you doing? Miller, how are you?
We're doing well, Joey. How are you on this Sunday?
I am doing well. It's beautiful out. Sunroof is open. great day to be alive. All right, first thing, their field was horrendous, and it was even more dangerous in the painted area for somebody to get hurt. You got to give credit to the offensive line for Kansas City, and then you got to put the blame on the groundskeepers for not having their field ready. And going to McClung, how does somebody not take a chance on him? Tell me.
Well, I mean, now, Joey, he did sign, like I said, a two-way contract with the Sixers. It'll be curious to see if they give him a shot coming out of the All-Star break or if they will look to just send him back to the G League. If that's the case, though, I do wonder if somebody will be interested in picking up, you know, just for, like I said, just to have to be able to say, hey, we've got the slam dunk contest winner on our roster. I think it is a possibility, and he showed you all the athleticism he has last night, so I think it's possible that he will get a crack at it, at least for a little bit here going forward.
I guarantee you the Philly fan store is selling those jerseys today.
Oh, yeah, you're right about that. Yeah, just you're absolutely right, Brian. Just yep. With the ability, the extra jersey sales that the Sixers yep. can have, they're definitely, you would think, going to keep him on their roster for the remainder of this season. And probably, I would think, you know, they'll try and capitalize on it next year as well. Because like you said, or like we played, you heard him say he'll be back for the dunk contest next year. 312-332-3776 if you'd like to jump on in. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley. We've got some over-unders for the Cubs and White Sox out. We'll let you hear what those are, and you can weigh in and let us know which way you're going on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Hanging out with you till 11 o'clock today, talking lots of football, did a little dunk contest. We've got Jesse Rogers coming your way at 10 o'clock to get you set for a little bit of spring training action. Pitchers and catchers have already reported. We have some Cubs and Sox over-unders in, which we'd like to pick your brains about. Let us know which way you're leaning on that. But first, let's check in with Joe, who's in Oak Forest, wants to weigh in on Mac McClung's dunk contest win. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Happy Sunday. So I've been a fan of McClung since he was at Georgetown and even some of his high school stuff because, I mean, the kid's always had some nice bounce.
Yep.
But my thing is this. Like, if we had, say, LeBron actually joined the dunk contest or, say, Giannis, or you get Zion or Ja Morant out there, these guys that are big name superstars, because that's the point, that the part that the dunk contest is missing. We knew there's probably 50% or more than that of the nation that didn't know any of these guys out there. And if they're going to start taking G Leaguers and stuff like that, I mean, I watch dunk contests that happen throughout the year, and these guys are like street ballers. And some of these guys can dunk 10 times better than NBA players. If you're doing that, then grab like, what the guy Jordan Kilcannon? He won this dunk contest. Like, he does like this backwards crazy dunk. If they're doing that, then get some of these guys in there, because obviously the actual NBA players don't want to participate in it. It's kind of sad.
No, it's a good point that Joe brings up, Brian, here, because you know we have nostalgia for, you know, when Jordan beat Dominique Wilkins at the Chicago Stadium, right? And sure. Part of the reason, you know, it lives on with such lore is because it was the best player in the game up against the human highlight film. And, you know, that's the part of the reason why he's what Joe brought up there is not wrong. The reality of, you know, where the dunk contest, what it's evolved to is not great. And even though I was captured by it last night, that's somewhat of a one-off, right? You can only have Mac McClung introduced to the nation once, and maybe next year everybody will be rooting for him to defend his title. But, you know, you can't go to that well year after year and think it's going to have the same type of impact.
No, I mean, Joe's right. You're right. It's in a league that's all about the stars, and it's a players' league. And Jordan wasn't making $50 million or $60 million a year, or, you know, whatever guys are making these days. You know, he was making more shoe sales and what he's making from Nike than he was making from the Bulls each and every season. So the superstars don't want anything to do with it. They don't want to get hurt. They don't want to put in the time. The All-Star weekend to them is about enjoying themselves and hanging out and partying and doing all the stuff that goes along with it. But if Mac hadn't been Mac McClung last night,
yeah,
our call is right. Who cares? I mean, you know, you're like, okay, whoever won it, it was no big deal. We wouldn't be talking about it today. Everything had to go exactly according to his plan, and it did. And it's a great story. But as you said, next year we'll see him again, and yeah, I don't know, the luster will be off the whole thing again, probably.
And Joe brought up Ja Morant as the name. Ja Morant said this weekend he's not going to be competing in a dunk competition. To your point, he just doesn't, unfortunately for the fans, you know, he doesn't want to put the time and effort into constructing everything that Mac McClung did to make it a spectacle last night. And, you know, it is. You'd love to see someone with Ja Morant's ability, who is a superstar in the league, show it off on that one night. But, yeah, it's become something that NBA players don't aspire to win like they once did, even when they're younger players. You know, that's not something that's on most players' radars anymore. Speaking of next year is here for the Cubs and White Sox. We'll check in with Jesse Rogers from spring training next.